If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today you'll hear Seth's interview with Rachel Bloom, the star and co-creator of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. She also answers a few more questions backstage at Studio 8G, exclusively for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
A national reckoning over sexual harassment continued yesterday with the firing of Today Show host Matt Lauer. Meanwhile, President Trump is becoming increasingly unmoored from reality. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. The recent avalanche of sexual harassment and assault allegations have hit some of the most high-profile figures in politics, entertainment, and the news media. And yesterday, we got yet another bombshell.
Breaking news involving a major media figure. NBC News has fired longtime Today Show host Matt Lauer over inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace.
NBC News says that Lauer was fired after a detailed complaint by a female colleague about inappropriate sexual behavior that happened at the 2014 Sochi Olympic Games.
And you thought the most disgusting thing at the Sochi Olympics was Bob Costas' pink eye. Well, move over, pink eye. There's a new grocer sheriff in town. Now, you might be thinking, how bad must this behavior have been to force NBC News to fire arguably its most profitable and powerful figure? I'll let Matt Lauer himself answer that.
You were probably the last guy in the world that they wanted to fire because you were the guy that the ratings and the revenues were built on. You carried that network on your shoulders for a lot of years. So doesn't it seem safe to assume that the people at Fox News were given a piece of information or given some evidence that simply made it impossible for you to stay on at Fox News?
Wow. He was talking to Bill O'Reilly, but he could have just as easily been talking to a mirror. Wait, doesn't someone else do that? Oh, son of a bitch. And as we found out, more details about Lauer's behavior. The story got even more disturbing. Variety reported that he summoned a female employee to his office and then dropped his pants, showing her his penis. After the employee declined to do anything, visibly shaken, he reprimanded her for not engaging in a sexual act. Lauer also once gave a colleague a sex toy as a present. It included an explicit note about how he wanted to use it on her. And as a general rule, if you're giving someone a dildo at work, you're the dildo at work. Of course, one of the craziest details that's been getting a lot of attention has been the specific way that Lauer was allegedly able to trap female staffers in his office. Variety reported that his office was in a secluded space, and he had a button under his desk that allowed him to lock his door from the inside without getting up. Let me address anyone who works in the button-installing business, if I may. Nobody wants a button under their desk for a non-evil reason. No one's ever said, I need a button under my desk that will release kittens from when my interns are feeling blue. You guys in a bad mood? If someone asks you to install a button under their desk, just nod and then report it to the police. Even Lauer's conversations with colleagues spilled over into deeply inappropriate subject matter. For example, Lauer would sometimes quiz female producers about who they'd slept with, offering to trade names. and he loved to engage in a crass quiz game with men and women in the office, marry or kill, in which he would identify the female co-host that he'd most like to sleep with. Well, I don't know who you said you'd marry in those conversations, but I do know you killed your career and yourself. Lauer's treatment of women also seemed to come through on air from time to time, from Ann Curry to Anne Hathaway. And who can forget this widely panned performance last year during the presidential campaign when he would barely let Hillary Clinton answer a question before interrupting her?
The United States alone could not do.
Right, but you said you're going to cheat.
Look, this is an important issue. I know we're on TV. We don't have a lot of time.
I want to get to a lot of questions.
I will talk quickly. So...
I'm going to get to that subject in a second.
There was helped us focus our attention in the fight against al-Qaeda.
Secretary Clinton.
In the Afghanistan-Pakistan theater.
I am fast running out of time. As briefly as you can.
But I want to just say one additional thing.
I've got 30 seconds left.
It was more like a year, but you were close. And, of course, President Trump, who has himself been accused of sexual harassment and assault by more than a dozen women, could not help but weigh in, tweeting, "Wow, Matt Lauer was just fired from NBC for inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace. But when will the top executives at NBC and Comcast be fired for putting out so much fake news?" I'm sorry, what's that? I can't hear you from backstage at the beauty pageant, you creep. And before you say that was a low blow, I swear I heard he did that somewhere. Oh, yeah, from him.
I'll tell you the funniest is that I'll go backstage before a show.
Yes.
And everyone's getting dressed and ready and everything else. And, you know, no men are anywhere. And I'm allowed to go in because I'm the owner of the pageant, and therefore I'm inspecting it. You know, I'm inspecting.
Right,
I want to make sure that
like
everything
is good. You're like a
doctor. You're there. Yeah, the dress. Is everyone okay? You know, they're standing there with no clothes. Is everybody okay? And you see these incredible-looking women. And so I sort of get away with things like that.
That's right. He said it on tape, and nobody cares because nothing matters. Now, the allegations against Lauer, of course, just the latest in a deluge that has revealed just how endemic the problem of sexual harassment is in virtually every aspect of society. Take Congress, where Michigan Congressman John Conyers has been accused by multiple women of sexual harassment. For example, a former employee of Conyers came forward with allegations last week, including one instance where Conyers called her to his office when he was in his underwear. Where are men getting this idea that just standing there in your underwear is irresistible to the ladies? Remember in seventh grade gym when you were terrified to be seen in your underwear because you looked ridiculous? That was the right way to feel about that. So everybody, please put your pants on. We're in enough trouble without half the government Porky Pigging it. Now, a former spokesman for Conyers tried to defend him this week, but I'm not sure his defense was all that convincing. He said of Conyers, "His closet is in his office, right here. He changes clothes in his office. Most of us have walked in on him accidentally without knocking and have seen him in his underwear. Big deal." Yeah, no, that is a big deal. Why is he changing at work? He's a congressman. He's not cooking meth in the middle of the desert. Even better, that defense came from a guy who was named, and this is his real name, Bob Wiener. Man, it's unfortunate when your spokesman's name reminds everyone of what you're accused of. It's like if O.J. had a lawyer named H.E. Kildum. So yet again, we saw this week just how pervasive the epidemic of sexual harassment is in media, entertainment, and politics. In fact, it's so widespread that a Democratic candidate for attorney general in Michigan named Dana Nessel decided to make it the subject of a new campaign ad by making a promise to voters about how she would conduct herself in office.
If the last few weeks has taught us anything, it's that we need more women in positions of power, not less. So, when you're choosing Michigan's next attorney general, ask yourself this. Who can you trust most not to show you their penis in a professional setting? Is it the candidate who doesn't have a penis? I'd say so.
She really upped the ante for her male opponents. The best they can counter with is an ad that says, "Yeah, I do have a penis, but I promise I won't bring it to work." Meanwhile, as the nation continues to process these mounting sexual harassment allegations, we're also, of course, dealing with the increasingly unhinged behavior of the president. Yesterday, he flew to Missouri to give a speech on the GOP tax plan, but veered wildly from one random topic to the next.
I told you that we would be saying Merry Christmas again, right? Totally disastrous trade deals. Oh, the trade deals. Trump is the opposite of an exaggerator. I think my accountants are going crazy right now. You don't see Merry Christmas anymore.
We're going to have the wall. Don't worry about it. We're going to have the wall.
We are going to be celebrating Merry Christmas again. These massive tax cuts will be rocket fuel. Little rocket, man. Rocket fuel for the American economy. He is a sick puppy.
Trump is starting to sound like a malfunctioning robot from a 60s sci-fi movie. Remember when the hero would ask a robot a question it couldn't answer, and then the robot would short-circuit? Could God make a rock so heavy he couldn't lift it? Rock so heavy does not compute. Little rocket man, build the wall. Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. He's right. Gotta give him credit. Right about one thing. Christmas is back, you guys. They lit the tree right outside this building last night. And I worked here during the Obama years. And I can tell you this. During the Obama years, there was no Merry Christmas. There was no tree lighting. We all just wished each other a nice December while Al Roker sadly pointed a flashlight at a fern. Christmas didn't go anywhere, you oaf. Also, the sun's coming up and going down. And somehow that speech wasn't even close to the most incoherent thing Trump did yesterday. He also woke up Brighton Adderall to retweet a series of racist anti-Muslim videos from an extremist hate group in the UK called Britain First. It was so shocking that even many of Trump's allies condemned him, like UK Prime Minister Theresa May, who's such a close ally of Trump's that they famously held hands at the White House earlier this year. May criticized Trump for his anti-Muslim tweet, saying, "It is wrong for the president to have done this." Not the strongest wording, but remember, she's British. "It is wrong for the president to have done this" is equivalent to, "Bitch, have you lost your mind?" That naturally prompted a response from Trump, who lashed out, tweeting, "Theresa May, don't focus on me. Focus on the destructive, radical Islamic terrorism that's taking place within the United Kingdom. We are doing just fine." Trump may have thought that was a sick burn, but there's just one problem. Trump tweeted at the wrong Theresa May. He accidentally tweeted at someone who just happened to have a similar Twitter handle. But that account only had 6 followers as of Wednesday afternoon. You would think a guy who spends 105% of his time on Twitter would know how to use it. It's like finding out Guy Fieri doesn't know how to use a deep fryer. So the country is continuing to wade through the rolling tide of sexual harassment allegations that seem to be pervading virtually every aspect of society. And meanwhile, we have a president who seems to be increasingly detached from reality. In fact, he seems to be descending further and further into the right-wing fever swamp. I don't know if Special Counsel Robert Mueller will indict Trump or not, but if he does, I hope he announces it by saying,
"Merry Christmas."
This has been A Closer Look. Our guest is the co-creator and Golden Globe-winning star of the critically acclaimed series Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which airs Fridays on the CW. Please welcome back to the show Rachel Bloom, everyone. Oh, thank you. Just dragged me out of my comfort zone.
I really did. I'm partially dancing because I'm so excited to be back. I am actively holding in a nervous dump.
Oh, wow.
It's like a conscious effort right now. And I was like, maybe if I dance, I'll forget about it. But now I'm reminding myself now.
Oh, yeah.
So it didn't work.
I would say that would be physical activity would never be the way I'd go if I had a nervous dump.
Yeah? What do you do when you have a nervous dump?
I just get very quiet.
You're just like super focused?
Just very quiet and small.
Yeah.
Which would be impossible, like, for the situation you're in now. You couldn't just shut down the way I would, yeah.
No. What do you do? How often? This is, like, really invasive. And yeah. It's like, we didn't talk about this. How often before this show do you get nervous dumps anymore? Or, like, are you used to this, like, you don't nervous dump anymore?
I don't nervous dump anymore.
Okay, got it.
I think it's because it's every night.
Yeah.
I think, like, at SNL, even though I did it for a long time, I still had the NDs.
Oh, yeah. Wait, are the bathrooms at SNL, like, horrible because everyone's like taking nervous dumps all the time?
This is a true story.
Please.
About how they're tiny.
Okay.
And there's a tiny 2-stall bathroom. And I was in it once in like my 3rd or 4th year,
And Adam Sandler was doing the cold open.
Yeah.
So he was just back to the cold open. He was in the other stall. And I came in and got in the stall. And just through the stall door, I heard, like, hey, who's in there? Who's in there, buddy? And I was like, oh, it's, hey, it's Seth Meyers. He's like, ah, taking a pre-show dump. I love it. And like, even for Adam Sandler, like, he was coming back. He left the show. Like, he still had to, like, do it. So
yeah.
There you go.
Makes a lot
of sense.
Like,
I feel like we've answered a lot of questions about...
That was always a question I have. Because, you know, because we discussed... Last time I was on here, I was an intern, but we had our own, I think, like, intern bathrooms. I never got to see... I never got a whiff of the stage bathrooms. Ooh, I wonder how... I wonder what their dumps smell like.
It is everything you can imagine.
Great, yeah. Great. Well, that's my time. It was great being here.
Yeah. I'm so happy to have you here. Holidays are coming up.
Yes.
And you brought us a home video. And you were somebody who was well-documented as a youth, yes?
Yeah, so, okay, so I was an only child. Basically every second of my childhood is on video. For my birthday this year, my mother gave me DVDs of all of our home movies. I have 70 DVDs. 70.
That's a lot
so
of DVDs.
So I brought one DVD, so, because we were talking about what am I going to talk about on the show, and I found a DVD recently of... us on the final night of Hanukkah, and I'm like 8, 9 years old. So what you have to know about my family's tradition on the final night of Hanukkah is we would get out all of our menorahs, plural menorahs, menorahs. And my family, so we were kind of secular Jews. We're like, we substituted like faith in God with just like kitschy menorahs. So there's like a Disney menorah and like a Three Little Bears menorah. We had like a school bus menorah. I think we had like Santa Claus on a motorcycle at one point. So we'd light all of our menorahs, but on this particular Hanukkah, it also fell on Christmas Eve. So while we're lighting all the menorahs, I'm trying to read The Night Before Christmas, and it becomes very apparent in the video that I want to show you that, like, all I want is to be Christian. But my parents keep interjecting with, like, snarky, ironic things to remind me that, like, this isn't for you.
Oh, interesting.
So that's all you have to know.
'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the... Oh, by the way, this is a little girl telling a story, okay? Of what happened on Christmas Eve. Oh, God.
Jesus, I'm gonna kill myself here.
So up on the housetop, of course, they flew with a sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas, too.
Was really a Jew.
Here is the reindeer.
Wait a minute. On Comet, on Cupid, on Donner, and Blitzen. Or Blinces.
On Blinces.
Blinces. Yeah.
You interned at SNL. You got your start doing a lot of sketch comedy stuff here in New York. Yeah. I did not realize you also performed on a cruise ship, like cruise ships here in New York.
Yeah, so there's a boat that goes around Manhattan on both the rivers called the Spirit of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think, unbeknownst to the people who just think they're getting like a simple cruise around Manhattan, it's also a musical cruise. And so we'd open up every cruise to like let people know it was kind of a musical cruise by singing a boat-themed parody of the Black Eyed Peas' I Got a Feeling.
Uh-huh.
And like you'd slowly see it dawn in people's eyes like, oh no, this is a musical cruise. What have I done? And it was like, yeah, like I can't hear that song now without just being like transplanted back to that.
Do you remember the parody lyrics?
I was trying to think of this. Okay, I think this is what. Okay, this is the one part I remember because we had choreo too. And keep in mind, like we're trying to pump people up as they're like trying to get off the boat because they're like, I don't want to be on this boat anymore. But I think it was like, tonight's the night. Let's live it up. Take off your coat and rock the boat. That's what I remember.
Not good. Not okay.
It was fun. There was one, I worked there the 4th of July one year, and I had two songs, because the waiters, we'd all get up and sing songs, and we'd have, like, boas on for no reason. I don't know. And sparkly vests, just to be like, look at me, not at the skyline which you paid to look at. And there was one, my song was I'm So Excited by the Pointer Sisters, and on 4th of July, I decided to do, like, a Founding Fathers-themed one. So I was like, I'm so excited, Thomas Jefferson. I just can't hide it, Ben Franklin. It wasn't well thought out. But I got, yeah.
I do think of those guys as being really excited.
Oh, sick. Yeah.
You've had a lot of wonderful guest stars on your show.
Yeah.
Over the years. Any favorites? Any personal favorites?
Yeah, okay, well, actually, so we had, first season, we had Dr. Phil on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and he plays a figment of my character Rebecca's imagination because she has some problems. And we've written him all this dialogue that was like him talking about like, well, the reason that you do this is because of your mother and your father's abandonment. And Dr. Phil came on and he was like, I'm sorry. I'll say whatever lines you want, but I can't say this. Like, this is not what I don't believe in this. Like, I don't think you should have an excuse for why you act the way you do. He goes, can I say what I would say? And we were like, let's do a take of you just being you, Dr. Phil. And he looks me dead in the eyes and he's like, my character is obsessed with a person named Josh on the show. He goes, Josh does not want you. He does not love you. He will never love you. You need to move on. And I almost started crying because it was so real and so true and like so much better than what we had had. It was great, but I had to go back into therapy after that day.
Yeah.
And then we had Josh Groban on too.
That's
recently
fantastic.
Who was amazing.
It just seems like the gamest guy.
He's so good. We made him sing his own name.
Yeah.
At one point he literally goes, like me, Josh Groban. And I was like, is that the first time you've been made to sing your own name? And he went, no. Yeah. That's just what people just do to him. They're like, you have the best voice, sing your name. It's okay, fine.
The show is so funny. The songs are so funny and also beautifully written. But also, I do want to take a second to talk about, you guys really address some serious issues. You know, you talked about it when you talked about Dr. Phil, but you have a character who has issues, and you talk about mental health issues and, you know, issues like suicide and borderline personality disorder. Have you found it, like, the writing of songs a nice way to deal with that on television? Because I feel like it's stuff that isn't talked about that often.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a nice way. I think songs are not only amazing joke delivery devices, but they're also great devices to deliver an idea, right? Because songs are kind of like musical essays. You have your thesis statement, which is in the form of the chorus, and then you have your supporting paragraphs, which are the verses and the bridge. And so it's a great way to distill something down and be like, this is what we are trying to say. And then likewise, when you're dealing with a serious subject matter, it's a good way to, I don't know, get underneath it and appeal to everyone's sense of humor, because sense of humor to me, a lot of people say, oh, it's a musical comedy show about mental illness. Why, you know, how do you joke about mental illness? But to me, sense of humor feels so emotional and personal that laughing about dark issues feels emotional in a way that it doesn't if we were just talking about them, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense. And it certainly comes through when you see it executed on the show. I just think you guys did an incredible job. And I'm so constantly overwhelmed by how many incredible songs you write over the course of a season. So congratulations on the show, and thank you so much for being back here.
Thank
it's
you
always so,
much.
So great
to see
you.
Thank you.
Rachel Bloom, everybody, a new episode of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend airs December 8th on the CW.
Hey, everybody, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with my good friend Rachel Bloom.
Hello.
Rachel, so we've known each other since college. We both went to NYU. I was in the improv group. You were in the sketch comedy group.
It was kind of like the Jets and the Sharks, except way less interesting and not very combative.
No, not combative at all. I feel like our groups did a lot of shows together.
And my husband, actually, who's an original founding member of my sketch group, was also one of the few founding members of your improv group.
Oh, is that right?
He is. He was one of the founders of Danger Box.
Yeah. I had no idea.
That's how badass he is. That's how strong his seed is.
That's how strong
he'd be spreading that comedy seed all over NYU.
Do you remember auditioning for Hammerheads?
I do. I remember it very well. And I also remember it because that was the first time I met my now husband.
Really?
He was sitting in my audition for Hammercats, and he said that, it's funny, I remember the night, but then I also now see it from his point of view, which is I was this loud drama kid because I went to the last, it was 9 p.m. auditions. Mm-hmm. I like put it off until like the last second. And I remember rehearsing outside, and everyone else I was there with was more of a writer than an actor. So I was like the loud theater kid being like, wah, wah, wah. And they could hear me in the audition room, and they're like, oh God, who's this f-ing annoying drama kid? And then I walked in and I like killed it. And
what did you do?
You read sketches that they gave you.
Oh,
like you
right.
read sketches of theirs, which is like looking back on it, like, okay, settle down.
Yeah.
They wanted to see if you could get the rhythms of like their writing and stuff. And then you turned in a writing packet. And actually, my friend Brendan, who's sitting right next to me.
Hey, Brendan.
You read my Hammercats writing packet, I think. Yeah, you did. You don't remember it. It wasn't very good, but you gave me feedback. So thank you for that feedback, Brendan.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. Brendan says I'm very welcome.
He's not mic'd, but
he's not mic'd at all.
You and Seth were talking about like your comedy background, like SNL, sketch, like things like Hammer Counts. You did, you interned in SNL, but you did like YouTube videos. When did you realize that you wanted to kind of blend comedy and music? Or did you pursue comedy before you pursued music? Or how did they kind of, when did they come together?
Well, I was a musical theater person my whole life. And I dabbled in writing musical theater. I started writing a musical in high school that I like would go back and forth with writing. I mean, I'm one of those people where I need a goal. Uh-huh. To write, which is why being on a sketch comedy group where we had to write a new sketch show every month was so good for me as a writer, because I'm not one of those people, if you don't give me a deadline, I won't get it done.
Uh-huh.
So I knew, I kind of wrote musical theater, and then I fell in love with writing sketch comedy, and the more I fell in love with writing sketch comedy, my literal tastes changed, and I kind of realized how shitty a lot of musical theater comedy was.
Sure.
And I was studying it at school, and I just grew more and more probably like snobby and impatient with like having to sing songs that I know I could do a better job at writing. And so I took a musical theater writing class through the graduate musical theater writing program. And then when I graduated, I loved that musical theater writing class so much. I was like, oh, you know what it was? I wanted to have a sketch show up at UCB, and I was brainstorming, and I was like, maybe I could write a song. And I wrote the song with my friend Mikey. And it was a song all about the movie Space Jam. And I really loved it. And I'd written like comedic songs before, but like this was the first almost like sketch as a song that I'd written. And I was like, I really think this is really special. And I remember going back to my husband, we were on a cross country trip, and I was like, can I play you this like Space Jam song? And it was gonna be within I was gonna do a sketch show that took place within the Broadway show A Chorus Line. And this song would end the show. That basically it was the idea of this person never singing a song, and then finally they sing a song, but after this whole show, it would just be about the movie Space Jam. And so I played the song Space Jam for Gregor, my now husband, and he was like, this should be your sketch show.
Yeah.
He's like, this is so much, everyone at the theater is doing sketch, but this is, no one's doing this. Yeah. And then I remembered after he said that, I was looking for more song ideas, and I decided I wanted to do stuff online, and I found a song that I'd written in college, but I didn't know what to do with it, called F*** Me, Ray Bradbury.
Yeah, of course.
And
that's stuck in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
If you haven't seen F*** Me, Ray Bradbury, quickly Google F*** Me, Ray Bradbury. I looked today. 4.2 million views.
Oh, it's up to 4?
Yeah.
Good for that.
Good for you.
It's crazy.
Sorry, go ahead. No, but it really is so great, and it's maybe the catchiest song you'll ever hear.
It is really, really catchy, and I remember I wrote it I wrote in college, and it was because when you write on a sketch group, you're always kind of thinking of sketch ideas, even like during the summers. And so my brain was active, and I was like, this is a funny song, but I don't know where I'd sing this. This isn't right for my sketch comedy group. And I just kind of shelved it because it didn't fit the mold of what I thought comedy was. I mean, that's the other thing, is the sketch comedy group that I was on was very, very male heavy when I was on it. And it was these guys that I like looked up to, but they had a very almost like mathematical way of viewing comedy, and I kind of like admired them and just like wanted to be like them, and I kind of let them, I kind of wrote stuff that like I thought they would like. I realized I was doing that subconsciously, and then I dated them, and it ended very badly. And I went, oh, f- these guys, right. And that's actually kind of what I think freed me to start thinking of sketch comedy not just as trying to fit into the like, I don't know, aggro straight dude gaze, for lack of a better like term.
Do you feel like, or do you hear from people that like they feel like you've kind of opened the door for what comedy can be? Because like musical comedy's kind of been around forever, but I feel like what you do, it was so unique and kind of groundbreaking, and I feel like it's kind of opened up other doors for sketch comedy. Doesn't have to be confined as a 3-minute sketch at UCB or something similar.
I guess I haven't heard. I mean, thank you.
Right, so you're changing the world here.
I mean,
when I think
of like who inspired me and who inspires us, I mean, one of the people I work with now, Adam Schlesinger, who's the music producer of Crazy X, and he co-writes and solely writes a lot of songs on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Mm-hmm. He has been writing musical comedy for years. So like I followed his work for many years. I mean, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
I will say there weren't as many, you know, women, which I think is cool. I think that's maybe, I hadn't seen like sexy pop deconstructed half as much as I had wanted to see. So that was a kind of corner that I felt like I could fill in a way.
Right.
But you know, and you hang around at UCB. I was really inspired by everyone around me. I felt like everyone was doing, not everyone was doing like comedy by the numbers. And even when it was comedy by the numbers, it was good. It was great.
Yeah, of course.
But I saw so many interesting one-person shows at UCB and that experimented with the form. I mean, just as I, and also just as I was making, starting to write my musical show, I lived with Alana Glazer and she was shooting the web series Broad City.
Oh, wow.
And so I was surrounded with people doing out of the box stuff.
Yeah, it seems like people do out of the box things, and then suddenly what was out of the box is very much in the box, and then other people are trying to do that thing.
Yes.
It's amazing how things change. And it also seems like comedy is what, like, different forms of comedy are changing with the different mediums of comedy. Like, we kind of, like, you really kind of were one of the first people to really do a ton of stuff on YouTube, ton of YouTube videos.
Maybe
the second wave of, like,
it was
YouTube.
The second wave.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and what it was, and the reason that it got so much attention, part of the reason that it got so much attention is the cool thing, starting with Funny or Die's The Landlord in, what, 2006?
Yeah, this is the Will Ferrell sketch.
So if you look at, like, the Will Ferrell sketches leading into a lot of, basically the trend was to make sketch comedy that looked kind of grainy and shitty. Right?
Yeah.
And that was also the equipment that was available. I made this music video and it looked beautiful because I got an amazing cinematographer, which I think a lot of sketches
is Paul Briganti.
Didn't even, Paul Briganti was the director. The cinematographer is this guy, Paul Rondeau, who is continues to be this one-stop shop. I mean, he's amazing. He owns a lot of his own equipment.
That helps.
But also the cameras are so great. So I think we shot Ray Bradbury on a Canon 5D and so I think it also, the production value blew people's minds because they were so used to this trend of like this kind of, I don't know, like, oh, I just got a camera and shot some with my friends, you know?
Right. This I really wanted to ask you. I was curious if you've just, if what musical theater actors that have been on your show think about what you've been able to provide to them. There are so many musical theater actors that kind of go from show to show.
Yeah.
It must be so exciting to be on a huge television show doing what they studied for stage.
Well, it was amazing to have Patti LuPone on.
I mean, that's insane.
I mean,
that's incredible.
The first conversation we had with her on the phone when she said this was her favorite show.
Really?
I was like, that's all I need.
Done.
And she had so much fun on our show. I remember at one point she was in rehearsals. She was in dance rehearsals for the song that she sang, Remember That We Suffered, because she plays my childhood rabbi. And she was like, this feels like off-Broadway on a budget. She was like, this feels collaborative and fun and not rigid. And it's pretty amazing because one of the other guys in that number is my husband's writing partner, Doug, who was also in the episode. And she's like doing bits with Doug. She's like, Doug, you're my inspiration. You inspire me every day. You're the reason I get up in the morning. It was, so that was like really, that was really cool. I mean, I'm trying to think of...
But like younger musical theater actors, like they must be just so excited to be employed on a show like this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everyone... I think the person on the cast who brings this up most is Gabrielle Ruiz, who plays Valencia, because she's been on so many... I mean, she's been on Broadway, I think, since her early 20s. She started booking work really quickly, and she was like... She is grateful for every second, because the treatment on a TV show... The rights that you have when you are operating under SAG contracts are a lot more than equity. You're getting paid more. You have way more rights. You have a trailer. You have free food. Yeah. And so I think just the lifestyle alone blows people's minds. Donna Lynn Champlin, who plays Paula, is
so
pretty great.
So great, yeah.
So there's this thing in film where as an actor, you under your contract, you have to get a 12-hour turnaround.
Okay.
So you wrap. You have to have 12 hours before your next call. And if you don't get that, it's what's called a forced call, and you get money. Donna Lynn loves forced calls because Donna Lynn, who's worked in Broadway for years, she goes, every forced call is money for my kids' preschool. And so she really tries to get us to force her calls.
Yeah.
And so there really is, there's a real theater spirit to the cast in general. I was just saying, Vincent, who plays Josh, someone will come into the hair and makeup trailer and say, like, you have to be on set in 5 minutes. He'll go, thank you, five, which is such a theater thing
such
to do.
It's such a theater thing, yeah.
It's such a theater. I mean, it's just become, I don't know, set in general feels like theater camp. Pete Gardner, who plays Daryl, is, it's so funny. He's one of the older members of our cast, but he feels like he's one of the younger because he has so much energy.
He plays his character with so much energy and so much joy.
And he has so much energy and joy. And I posted a video online, but on my Instagram, but He'll just bring his ukulele to work, and they'll have like little sing-alongs in the holding room. And he, like, he plays ukulele, and Scott plays guitar, and like every, I don't know, it's there's a real theater feeling to all of it.
Yeah, it's such a great show. I was just like going through the videos today just to refresh myself, and it's so funny. Also, the variety of types of songs you do, and this variety of subject matter. If you're not familiar with the show, please go watch the show, and also just watch as many YouTube videos as you can of what Rachel does. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's, look, we couldn't do it. Adam Schlesinger and Stephen Gold, his producing partner, who produced the songs, the fact that they can produce any genre of music is really, really rare.
It's incredible.
In music producers.
And they nail the genre.
No, they nail it. They're brilliant. And then
From pop to country to 80s, it's phenomenal.
It's amazing. And then, I mean, every time I write with my co-writers, which is Adam and then Jack Dolgen, who co-wrote and produced most of my songs before Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and is now one of the songwriters. I mean, the people I work with are just so, so good, and they're both so brilliant. And yeah, we just hit, well, we're now above it, but this year we hit our 100th song. 100th wow. original song mark.
That's incredible.
But yet no Grammy nominations.
You hear that?
Nope, nope, not for us.
Yeah, just a Golden Globe.
That's true. So I'm not going to shouldn't complain too hard.
But if there are any Grammy voters on here?
There are so many.
Yeah.
It's the Recording Academy.
They're listening. No, it's a podcast.
All right.
Rachel, it's such a pleasure seeing you and chatting with you. And I just can't tell you how excited I am.
Henry, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Really quickly.
It's such a dream working here. This is so much fun, Rachel. So good seeing you.
So good
Congratulations.
Seeing you.
Congratulations.
We're holding hands right now. You can't see it.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.